Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And welcome back to the EPL Roundtable. I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, and as always, if you'd like to reach us at the podcast, you can do so by either tweeting us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us at eplroundtable@gmail.com.
Hi, I'm Sean Whetstone. I'm a not-so-happy hammer. That's West Ham to you and me. You can find me on Twitter, at West Ham Football. I blog for Clarence Hugh and West Ham Till I Die.
Hi, my name is Gitos Whelan, Swansea City fan and also contributor to the Jackcast podcast, which you can find on Twitter at the Jackcast.
Joshy here, Manchester United fan. You can find me on Twitter at @doc_Joshy and various casts and YouTube channels that I contribute to.
All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. Up first, of course, we have Making the Rounds, where we each have a few minutes to discuss what's been happening at our clubs this week. Sean, it's been a while since we've had you on, so I guess we have a lot of news to catch up on the whole, but what's been happening over there West Ham way?
Well, do you know what it is, Kev? I'm not saying it's deliberate, you being a Spurs fan, but you always invite me on when West Ham are doing really badly. And funny enough, when we beat Spurs or a big team, you never invite me on. It always seems to be doom and gloom. But no, we're not doing very well, are we? We're not winning games. We've lost three games on the bounce. And it's hard to see where our next game's coming from, really. Or our next win's coming from. It was awful. You know, I was at the London Stadium on Saturday. Conceded two goals. You're really up for it and you think, come on then, you know, Leicester have been really poor. They haven't won an away game for 11 months and we're 2-0 down after 6 minutes. I mean, where'd you go from there? We have a rule, right? I've been a season ticket for many, many years. We have a rule. If you're 3-0 down before half time, you're allowed to go. So I got very close to going. But the first half was absolutely atrocious. And, I'm speechless. You know, as much as I love Slaven Bilic, and we all do, and we think he's a great man, some of his tactics just confound me. And, right, for novelty value, he played a right-back in right-back position, which is a first for him. But you sort of got to say, how long is it going to go on? Yes, when you look right at the end of the game, if you watch the game, we could have got an equaliser and maybe wouldn't have been so downtrodden today. But, you know, it's a cumulative effect of loss after loss and lots of draws. I think we haven't won a game for 7 games now. And you can't forget, you know, there's our chairman last week talking about, you know, we're aiming for an 8th spot. And the rest of us are going, wake up and smell the roses. We're not out of this relegation dogfight yet. You know, you never know. We could be sucked back in it. We still got to get quite a few points. Now, don't get me wrong. There's a lot worse teams in the league this year. So I do think we'll be all right. But you can't be complacent. You know, you've got to get that magic 40 points. And at the moment, as a West Ham fan, I just don't see where the next win's coming from. I've looked at the remaining games and I'm going, maybe Burnley away at the end of the season, the last game of the season. And apart from that, I'm not seeing a win.
And Burnley are profoundly good at home.
Yeah, I know. So you're even going to take that away from me, Kev.
Sorry.
I don't know. Obviously we're not going to get rid of Slaven Bilic. Before the end of the season, there's no point. But it does show you Shakespeare, who replaced Ranieri at Leicester. he's won five games, including this one against West Ham. You know, so it does show you the new manager bounce does work. You know, here's a man, Ranieri, who won the Premier League, delivered the unthinkable. He gets sacked. You know, Leicester actually looked in relegation trouble. Everyone moaned about it and said, oh, my God, that's not cricket. But it worked, and they've won five games on the trot. Mm. So, I don't know. We need to get to the summer, survive in the Premier League, and then we need to reform. We just need to decide who's in our squad, who's out, and whether our manager stays or not. But, that's all I want to say at the moment. It's quite depressing.
Well, there was a lot of excitement around West Ham coming into the season, with the new stadium. Obviously, Payet coming off a terrific summer at the Euros. Bringing in Andre Ayew, I thought, was a very good signing. And something has gone wrong this season. Do you think that's mostly Bilic? Do you blame the stadium at all, which was kind of the early suspect that people were pointing at? Why do you think there have been so many struggles for West Ham this season?
Well, funny enough, I was just asked the same question on BBC earlier, and they said, you know, does Slav have an excuse that we move stadiums? Well, I've done a bit of research on this. First of all, the size of the pitch. The size of the pitch is a Premier League standard, which is at the Emirates and seven other Premier League sides. So there are eight Premier League sides in addition to West Ham that have got exactly the same dimensions, right? So it's not like we've never played on a pitch this size and it's confusing us. Secondly, moving to a different stadium. Now, professional footballers shouldn't be, you know, all suddenly, oh, well, that's a slightly different format or a slightly different, it's an oval shape, and that means we play a game back. Oh, come on. You know, I've looked at many different clubs that have moved stadium. Some have done poorly, some have done well. Spurs, you know, could use the same excuse at Wembley with Champions League at the moment. But I don't buy it. You know, I don't believe stadia make players pay differently. So I just think it's an excuse. I think the main reason we've done badly, there's two reasons. The first one is we spent 50 million quid and didn't do very well. You know, we bought Simone Zaza in, we bought Tor in, we bought in Caleri, we bought in Font, we bought in Snodgrass, we've bought in, none of these have really worked. We bought in Faguli, we bought in, I'm trying to remember, Northout. And Ayew, £20 million record signing hasn't worked out for us. The 50 million has been poorly spent. It hasn't worked out. Slaven Bilic, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, David Sullivan, he did all the signings. No, I get told that Slaven Bilic signs off each and every single signing. Otherwise, they don't come. You know, he's a proud man. He wouldn't have it any other way. So he signs off on all of them. Did Clary probably come through David Sullivan? Yes. Did some of them come through our head of recruitment, Tony Henry? Yes. But a lot of these were Bilic's choices to begin with, or in the case probably of Clary, he signed off on them. And therefore, he's got to take his share of the blame. And finally, stop playing people out of positions. You know, Antonio is not a right back. Chiarty is not a right back. Or a centre forward, and it's just he almost wants to prove a point by playing people out of position, and it's like everyone else can see what he can't see. You've got Ian Wright and Michael Owen and all the commentators going, "Why is he doing that?" You know, Chiarty's not a right back. He's not disciplined enough. He's not skilled enough in that role. And you just go, and everyone's shouting at the TV, but he's a stubborn man, and it doesn't matter how many people tell him. So I think the tide is slightly turning. Great guy, lovely guy, passionate guy, West Ham through and through. But has he got a plan B, and will he be able to pick up his game by the end of the season? I just don't know.
All right, definitely something to keep an eye on. Gitto, last time we had you on, everything was super rosy. Things were going great for Swansea. You had Sigurdsson just scoring and assisting at will, basically. And it looked like you had a pretty nice run of fixtures ahead of you. Now a couple of stumbles later, and it looks like you're right back in the thick of the relegation fight. What's been going on over there at Swansea?
Yeah, I think my appearance on this podcast jinxed us, basically. So I hope you're happy with yourself.
I'm getting a lot of flack early on in the show.
We were the last time I was on here, we'd just beaten Burnley 3-2, and that was a real high point in the season. And everything was just going great. Since then, last week against Hull, things just went against us, really. We had injuries at bad times, a poor refereeing decision went against us, and we wasted some good opportunities to score. And it was just, you got the feeling there was one of those days, you know, that where things just don't go your way. Against Bournemouth on Saturday, it was a little bit different to that. We really genuinely did not play well for the first time. Yeah, for probably the first time since Paul Clement's been here, it was a genuinely poor performance, you know, up there with the kind of thing that we were the kind of thing that we were seeing week in, week out under Bob Bradley, just with fewer goals conceded. But it was a bit of a worry, I'll be honest, because we had this run of fixtures which we thought were winnable, or at the very least you can get points out of them. We beat Burnley, yes, but we've now lost to Hull and lost to Bournemouth, and it is basically the circumstances surrounding the performance that really get you worrying after the Bournemouth one, because nobody had a particularly good game. The formation was bizarre, and none of the players seemed to know what they were doing. We had injury problems. We didn't have a fit right back, so we had Leroy Fair playing at right back. Sean was complaining about Mika Antonio playing at right back for West Ham. I would have gladly taken Mika Antonio ahead of Leroy Fair, because he just did not look at all in that position.
Fortunately, the modern wingback doesn't have to hustle a whole lot back and forth, so it perfectly suits Fair.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing, though. I mean, okay, if you have to play a player out of position at right back, fine, you sometimes have to do that. But Leroy Fair, what about Leroy Fair makes you think he's going to be an effective fullback? It made no sense from the start. Absolutely crazy. But Fernando Llorente didn't look fit. We didn't really create much. Jordan Ayew had his first start, and I have no idea what we're going to do with him. He just looks out of sorts in every single position we've tried so far. And we had the same kind of problem with Andre when he was here, that we couldn't find his best position. But Andre Ayew was so good, he could work as a striker, as a number 10, or as a winger, even if you could see it wasn't his best position. With Jordan Ayew, he's just not good enough to do that. He's nowhere near the standard of his brother. So it's that's a problem. But generally, it was just sluggish performance. Bournemouth were easily the best team, could have scored more. And really, the international break can't come soon enough. We need to regroup now, because we've got another big game coming up in 2 weeks against Middlesbrough. And they looked improved today against Manchester United, even if, you know, they still frustrated you to death. But, you know, that you expect it to be a tough game. And, we need to go back to doing what we were doing well before. Before the whole match, because we've lost our way slightly in the last two games, and it is a little bit worrying because other teams down the bottom are winning and are pulling clear of the relegation zone.
Yeah, on a little bit more of a positive, a lot of football fans, especially in the fantasy realm, really started paying attention to Alfie Mawson, because he's now second highest scoring defender in the Premier League at the moment. What's the story behind Mawson, especially in real life, as to what he's helped bring to this defense?
Yeah, I mean he's a fantasy dream, really, because he's one of our most potent goal scorers at the moment. It's bizarre. We've never been very good from set pieces, but now we've got Mawson and Gilfy supplying him with awesome crosses. He's loving life in that box. The other side of things, it's not quite as rosy. He's still got a little bit to learn defensively. There's no doubt about that. But you know, he's got a lot of weight on his shoulders. He's carrying the defense at the moment. He is, even though he's only 22, he's acting like the senior partner in the center back partnership. He's the one that's being asked to organize the defense, and he's doing a decent job of it considering the players that surround him. He's very strong in the air. Brilliant feet. There is a bit of John Stones in him. You know, he's both of them came through at Barnsley. He's a fantastic passer of the ball and very confident dribbling. He just doesn't lose possession and like I say, he contributes goals too. So he's fantastic in that respect. But defensively, still a little bit of work to do.
Do you think it's just age?
Yes, and well, you know, it's sometimes dangerous to just assume that a player is going to improve with age. We've seen plenty of promising youngsters, especially English ones, who people have said, "Oh, future England captain," and then actually they don't really, you know, live up to that. I mean, John Stones is still young and could still turn out like that. But the one I'm thinking about most of all is Phil Jones, who, was built for ages and ages and ages as a future world beater, and he's just not turned out like that. So you don't want to overhype at all. But you ask him about off the field too, and he is, by all accounts, a really wonderful human being too. He does a lot off the field. He's just a nice guy, he's got a little bit of personality about him too. So he's the kind of guy that you'd love to have around the club. And we're hoping that he's the next Ashley Williams, that he's going to be around for years to come, and that he is going to be the person that we build our defence around. And that rebuilding job can't come soon enough because the rest of our defence is awful.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear you mention the set-piece thing because I forgot that in years past you used to concede loads of headed goals and never score them. And it seems like you've gotten better at both ends regard. So that's definitely an improvement. And hopefully we get to see more of it in the Premier League next season. All right, now coming to you, Joshy, talking about Manchester United. Obviously a depleted team today with no Ibrahimovic, no Pogba, no Herrera. Martial, I think, came on as a sub later on in that match. But was it just about the 3 points today?
We've had three games in 6 days, starting with Chelsea in the FA Cup on Monday, then Rostov in Europa League on Thursday, and obviously the game today. So that's two away games. And obviously the week before that, we had the round trip to Russia. So it's a lot of football and some travelling in there. I wasn't expecting a huge amount of sort of free-flowing, exciting football. And the result was the most important thing. And obviously, it got it. And I think it was actually a decent performance, sort of all around slow. And then got into the game, and our pace really caused problems for Middlesbrough. Rashford took apart Bernardo several times. Lingard was actually really good. And I think we deserved the points, although at the back, again, looking shaky with this back line that Jose's been going for, which turned into a hand back line, I think, by the end of today's game. I think we had centre-backs on, or four centre-backs on the pitch today. I'm not really sure why we've started playing this 3-4-3 or 3-5-1-1 or whatever it is he's playing, but for some reason that's the way he's gone, and I'm not really a fan of it. I don't think it gets the best out of our best players, and the centre backs aren't like the likes of Smalling, Jones, Rojo. They have a mistake in them anyway, and then you're piling them all in together in the same sort of area, and then they're just basically, I don't think they're positionally play that role, that form, and we don't have anyone at the back who's good enough on the ball to step out of that three-man defense. So it's, you know, a lot of the time Smalling is being bypassed, which is a good thing actually, but in the end it's like having one less man. And then by the end of the game, Rojo, Joe, Smalling, Bailly, as four centre-backs. It was so weird. They were like within about 10, 12 meters of each other. And then we had Valencia at right wing-back and Ashley basically playing as a left-back. So it was the weirdest formation. And obviously, you know, that with that kind of flat back six, which is basically what we were playing, you're inviting pressure on, and we allowed Middlesbrough to get back in the game. Smalling with an absolutely horrendous error, allowing I think it was just set the goal. So it was just a bit of a weird weird performance. And we had through against Chelsea, Herrera got sent off, and immediately Mourinho brought on Fellaini, and I had no idea why. We lost Herrera, but we could have still gone to a 4-4-1, which a lot of teams do play when they're down to 10 men, and it still offers that, especially with someone like Rashford with his pace. But he brought Fellaini on, and we basically sat back the whole for about an hour. It was just a weird performance. And then against Rostov as well, again, it was a little bit odd. And it's been an interesting week. In contrast to the other two we've just had on, our right back has been phenomenal this season. And he started off as a right winger, but the whole season he's been like a machine, and he basically scored the one type of goal he sort of deserves, because he just put Valdez under so much pressure, and he didn't give up. You know, a lot of players would have just given up on it as it went towards the key. He bogged back into position, getting set to defend the kick, but he chased it down. Yes, Valdez slipped, but he probably wouldn't have slipped if he wasn't under pressure. He'd have had time to take a touch, etc. And obviously Valencia scored the goal. So, you know, shout out to him, because he's been really good all season, and he got that goal. So,
yeah, end of the day, you did get the 3 points. I do have a question, though, about Marcus Rashford. Obviously, he's gotten a couple starts here because there have been issues with the other forwards, with suspensions and injuries and such. Let's rewind back to the summer when you brought in Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And a lot of people were questioning whether or not Zlatan would do well in the Premier League. We now know that. That's been put to bed. But the other question was, would it stunt Rashford's development and Martial's development, where he's kind of been shunted out wide, Rashford just basically not getting the minutes anymore? Have you seen that to be the case?
Well, taking it back to the summer, I thought that someone like Ibrahimovic would be the more ideal signing in terms of Rashford's development. First of all, you know, given his background, his career, his record, he's obviously a leader, massive personality, and obviously a quality player. So there's a lot of things for Rashford to learn from him. And he's a top professional in terms of the way he trains, looks after himself. So all of those things are things that Rashford, you know, even at the time, I think he could look up to. The other thing is, at 35, I think he was when he signed. He wasn't a long term signing, obviously. So a couple of years, or even just the one season, or you know, whatever, playing under Zlatan, he can learn a lot. And it doesn't mean that he's going to be consigned to the bench for 4, 5, 6 years. Had we signed, for example, I'm not saying that we would have done, but had we signed someone like, say, Lewandowski or Griezmann or someone like that, if they'd come in, they're obviously going to be the number one striker, and that's for the long term. So in terms of his development, I wasn't worried at the time. As the season has gone on, at the beginning, he wasn't really getting the minutes, but I think over the course of the season, he has got a lot of minutes and a lot of appearances. Yes, out wide, and hence his goal scoring has been a bit poor this season. I think he hasn't scored in his last 17 starts now, or something like that, which obviously isn't great for him. But he's playing out wide, and when you watch him, you can see his pace is still is always going to be a problem. But he's taking players on. He creates things. He's got good skill. His build up play and touch, I think, have improved. And his awareness and his movement have improved. His finishing and his end product have kind of suffered. And whether that's because of a lack of confidence or what, I'm not sure. But I think that's something that we we've seen in strikers before, especially young strikers, that they hit hot streaks and then they go on off the boil. So I'm not worried about that. I don't think it's an inherent inability to score goals, because obviously he scored goals at the beginning. He scored goals last season and sort of exploded onto the scene. So I think it's been good for him to learn from a sort of top professional like Zlatan. He may sort of feel like he'd like more minutes through the middle, but I think in the long run, this will do him good. He's only, 18, 19 years old. And he's like today against Middlesbrough, he didn't get a goal and he probably should have done, but he was getting into those goal scoring positions. He was absolutely burning the Middlesbrough defenders for pace. I mean, over short distances as well, you know, over like 10 meters, he's suddenly 2-3 meters ahead of the defender. Over 5 meters, he just went past Bernardo like he wasn't there. So, you know, he's got a lot better at sort of running those channels, and he's creating opportunities for his teammates as well. So it's difficult to say. I mean, I don't think that he should have any complaints in terms of the number of minutes he's getting. Perhaps he might feel he should get more games through the middle. But other than that, I think he's had a decent season in terms of his performances, even if the goals haven't come. So I think he looked, and he seems like someone who's got his head in the right place, because when he's been interviewed, he's always been positive. He's always said, I've learned loads, working with Zlatan on the training pitch is amazing, et cetera, et cetera. So I think he'll take this forward and it will be a learning experience for him.
All right. It'll definitely be interesting to keep an eye on it. Something that kind of popped to my mind as you were talking about, you know, how he was being propped up a little bit is when we, and I am loath to admit this, when we fell down to third at the end of last season, I thought that in the long run, that could actually be good for us because it killed the hype going into the next season, where we weren't going to be talked about title contenders. I'm just interested to see if, you know, the media gets after the young player so much, maybe being taken out of that spotlight will allow him to develop in a more healthy way long term. I don't know. It'll definitely be interesting to keep an eye on them.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
All right, for Tottenham, it started with some very good news today. We found out that Walker and Wanyama both passed their fitness tests. Obviously, Son Heung-min up front because Harry Kane was out with his injury, which basically every time we hear any news, the timetable's getting shorter. The media jumped to rest of the season before he had even had his scans done. It did look like a high ankle sprain at the time, and it was basically confirmed as such when they compared it to the injury he sustained against Sunderland. So then we were thinking in that 6 to 8 week time frame, because he missed 7 weeks during that one. So then that's what everybody thought. And then the club came out and said 4 to 6 weeks, two of which, of course, will be this international break. So we really could be back quite soon, hopefully before a certain Bournemouth match, which I will be attending. But it is very good news to hear that he's getting better. But we did have this dilemma of Son or Jansen up front. Jansen, of course, scoring from open play against Millwall. Realize that not necessarily the opponents to really write on your resume there, but he did finally score from open play. So there was some thought of, you know, do you kind of feed the quote-unquote hot hand, let him get the start? But no, we did start with Son, which I think was the better choice. And Son kind of got some stick today. I think the role that he was fulfilling was a little bit like Firmino at Liverpool, where unless you're watching what he's doing off the ball, you're really missing a lot of the point of having this kind of wing forward mentality where they're dragging the defense around, laying balls off behind them, really running the channels and everything. I think for some reason, that's a lot harder for people to validate than just a big striker in the middle. You see them. You see what they're doing. But I think Sun played very well, despite what some people may say, especially in the first half. But I don't think the drop-off in the second half was as severe as people said it was, and I don't think it was necessarily his fault. I think as a team, we kind of stepped off the gas a little bit. But yeah, so I didn't have a problem with that. It will be interesting to see if Jansen actually starts the next match, because Sun will be traveling to Korea to be playing with the national team. And in the past, with Sun and Lamella in particular, these far-traveling players, Pochettino tends to like to give them a rest, their first match back. So if you see Jansen starting in our next match 2 weeks from now, do not be surprised, because a lot of those stars are kind of aligning. That being said, Jansen was not as great as people were saying he was when he came on as a sub. He absorbed a lot of pressure. He put his back to goal, which is his greatest strength, the one thing that's really translated from his time in the Netherlands to England. Obviously, the finishing has not necessarily come with it. But yeah, I think he'll be fine up front. The people that were writing him off saying we should sell him already, especially with the Soldado comparisons, Jansen is 23 years old. Soldado was 29. He was in his prime. He just scored 20 goals in four straight La Liga seasons. Soldado was meant to be the finished product and couldn't score goals. Jansen is a developing young player. If anything, even at the worst times, I was saying maybe alone next season. But, you know, we've seen some upside. I think it's important to keep him at the club. You know, will, right after I was talking about the Rashford thing, will we bring in somebody else ahead of him, which could stunt his development? Maybe. I'm not sure Poch thinks that he can trust Jansen up front. In fact, the starting of Sun probably proves that he doesn't fully yet. But, you know, give him a whole summer, see what happens. Hopefully he can be the backup striker that we need him to be. As for the rest of the match, Southampton are not nearly as good defensively as they were with Van Dijk and Jose Font, who, of course, is now with Sean there over at West Ham. Van Dijk with a long injury. So us getting through them wasn't terribly surprising, especially at the beginning. Like I said, Son was kind of running them ragged a bit. For the second goal, the penalty, Son had a beautifully chested ball down to Ali, who then kind of got hacked down in the box. But Eriksen's first goal was just absolutely terrific from outside the box. Since coming to the Premier League, no Premier League player has more goals from outside the box than Christian Eriksen. He scored against Southampton again, which he just seems to love to do, especially at White Hart Lane. So we'll see if that translates to the new stadium. And if not, we can definitely blame it on the stadium shift.
If you can afford it, Kev.
All right. Yeah, that's fair. the price of the stadium has definitely gone up, and a portion of that is because of the Brexit scenario. Apparently the cost of the materials and everything has skyrocketed since then. So it will be interesting to see how that all gets handled. I think I read recently that the mayor had to intervene about something involving the stadium. I obviously am not based in London.
You still got raising money. Question, yeah. I want to ask you, Kev. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've seen the video. What were your boys thinking singing "We Hate Millwall, We Hate Millwall" as a load of Millwall fans? I mean, how crazy was that? Have you seen the video?
Yeah, I have. First of all, there's two things. Doesn't everyone is the first thing. The second thing is, yeah, you don't sing that to somebody's face. In fact, there was a similar, quote unquote similar incident here in the States when Tottenham played Liverpool a few years back. And there was an Arsenal-clad teenager singing a song that was referencing the Holocaust. And one of the bigger guys just knocked him the hell out. And it was very awkward because do you stop? Do you see if he's okay? The moral of the story is just don't. And I think that that applies on both sides of that aisle. Maybe just don't. That's my advice, is to not incite that kind of things. Wait, wasn't there a... Did Millwall play West Ham this season at some point?
No, we haven't played Millwall for some time.
Oh, okay.
The last time...
I just remember an incident with Millwall this season.
Like 100 arrests.
Oh, great. Standard.
We have.
But yeah, don't, would be my advice. Don't instigate fans in general, and especially not Millwall fans who seem to enjoy that sort of thing. I'm really trying to not get into hot water here, so I'm going to keep talking about the Southampton match. we did play very well in the first half, but we let them back into it a lot in the second half. Like I said, we were backing off a bit. The press was less consistent. There were several times, specifically with Eriksen, where he looked back to see who was marking the guy the pass was about to go to, and no one was there, and he was getting frustrated with that, which is entirely warranted. Toby was kind of at fault for the goal, and, you know, you're not going to blame him, just like we don't blame Hugo when he has problems, because if you think about, you know, their impact on our defense and all the goals that they've prevented, they have a lot of capital there to spend before we would really get mad at Toby or Hugo for making any errors. On the balance of the whole match, we probably did deserve to win. We probably should have had at least another in the first half, but they absolutely could have turned things on us in the second half after they got their goal. If Shane Long knew what offside was, they definitely could have had three or four goals because we were playing pretty high, which is something that we haven't tended to do as much of late with the high line because we really trust that back line so much. On the injury front, I already talked about Harry Kane a little bit. The name that kind of has fallen through the cracks is Danny Rose, who has been one of the best left backs in the country this season, which still tastes odd coming out of my mouth. But the fact that we've done what we've done without him, I think, is very impressive. We haven't lost since we lost Danny Rose to injury. The fact that he's going to be back next week is great. Like I mentioned with the Kane thing, you're eating up 2 weeks of that recovery time with the international break. So all of a sudden, you know, it looked like we were fine for top four about 3 weeks ago. Then after the Kane injury, it was kind of thrown up in the air. But with today's result, kind of like I was talking about with Joshy, it was just the 3 points today. Just escape, get your 3 points without Kane or Rose, be now 2 weeks closer to having them both back. And it's starting to look better. Obviously, results went our way as well, which is definitely a good thing. I'm not going to start looking at points or talking about gaps at all because I know better. But things are looking very good for us at the moment, and hopefully we can come back from the international break and pick up points. And that is one more thing, is we picked up points heading into the international break, which had been a problem for us in past years and just hasn't seemed to be so this year. All right, Joshy, we kind of teased in your segment that we were going to come back to you about another Manchester United topic. That is Jose Mourinho mentioning this week that some of the TV scheduling, the fact that you had to play Rossoff late on Thursday but then had to play the early match today, that not enough is taken into account before some of these TV matches are scheduled, because this match was actually scheduled before you knew that it was the Rostov draw. And if the match had been reversed, you would have had a trip to Russia and back before having an early match this weekend. But we're going to open this up to the whole group. Do you think that this is an issue kind of throughout the Premier League? And if so, has it affected your club this season?
Yeah, it has actually. And not so much the local fans, and I suppose this is part of modern football. West Ham have more and more fans that come from all over Europe. In fact, some come in from the US, and not long ago, in fact, at the Chelsea game, I was in the corporate box, and I was guest of two American Hammers who I'd never met. I met them online, but they come over twice a year and host a box and bring along bloggers and journalists and so on and so forth. And, of course, on the Chelsea game was one of those where they booked their flights, they booked their hotel, only for the game to move. Lucky enough, they were lucky enough to move their hotel and flights. But I think on the same game, the Chelsea game, the Scandinavian Hammers, or the Finnish Hammers, I can't remember it was, they couldn't, and they lost it all. They lost their hotel, they lost their... Well, no, they flew over, actually. They couldn't get the time off work. They flew over, came and did the stadium tour, and then flew back again on the Sunday night before the game was played on the Sunday, the Monday, even though they had the ticket. So this is the problem. You know, while some of us can, you know, change our schedules locally, we forget that this is an international game, and a UK-wide game, and some people can't just change their schedules and suddenly, you know, change their flights, change their hotels. And guess what? There's no compensation. If you've booked your hotel or you book your flight and there's no cancellation in it, because, you know, these airlines and will charge a lot more if you want to be flexible, and even hotels do, then you're left out of pocket just to suit the TV schedules. And personally, by the way, I just think this should all end, and we should just play all of the games on a Saturday afternoon like they are at the moment. You can choose them like you get in America, Kev. You can watch a game on a Saturday afternoon that we can't watch in the UK.
Yeah, and we also have replayability. We can go back and watch them in full online.
Exactly. So if we schedule the games to begin with, right? And yeah, all right, you want to move some of them out because you don't want to watch them all on a Saturday, so some of the big games would be moved to a Sunday or a Monday. That's fine, but schedule them in the beginning of the season, because you don't have to have this silly thing of first picks, who you're going to move, etc. It's not fair on the fans. And I know a number of people that have had to miss games because they've either had some kind of family arrangement, or as I've just said, they've lost their flights or their hotels because they weren't changeable. So, but it will fall on deaf ears, I'm afraid. Nothing's going to change.
That's obviously from the fan perspective, and there are loads of issues and like stupid night games on a Monday night in London with Manchester. You know, United fans travel all the way down to London and then you've got to get back up. You know, there's all sorts of examples of that. But I think, like, if we think, about what Jose Mourinho said, obviously he's looking at it from the team perspective. So, from a fan perspective, nothing's going to change. From the team perspective, I think there more can be done in terms of helping clubs that are in Europe. I know I'm talking as a United fan and we're in Europe and it's affected us this week, but it is, a lot of the English teams have looked pretty tired in European matches, and I don't think the Premier League helps in that. Why couldn't, say for example, the United game be the afternoon game, just that extra bit of rest, or even, a Monday night game? I know it's international week, but, there are lots of examples of sort of special dispensation for certain players and certain matches when there is a scheduling conflict. So I can see where Jose is coming from, but at the same time, it just sounds like a bit of an excuse, or he's sort of making the excuse before the game starts. And then it's sort of ready made for him in case we don't sort of do well. I'm not saying that's what he's doing, but it sometimes does sound like that, because we do have a big squad. We do have players that haven't been playing and could have done a job, against Middlesbrough, who, I'm not trying to disrespect them, but they are down at the bottom end of the league. They haven't scored that many goals. They're having issues getting results. I think that was the first goal they scored today in 600 minutes or something ridiculous. They've gone a long time without scoring goals.
Yeah, so worst attack in the Premier League.
Yeah, so players like, Luke Shaw, he's not been getting minutes. Schweinsteiger, he's sort of was out of favour, then back in favour, was on the bench quite a few times, came on, and now he's out of favour again. So he's not really been getting any minutes. Then you've got youth players like Timothy Fosu-Mensah, who I think should be getting minutes, and certainly against a team like Middlesbrough, he could have done a job. If Jose was really that worried about players being overstretched and exhausted, then why isn't he using these fringe players who actually, in my opinion, like someone like Luke Shaw shouldn't be a fringe player. I think he played a game four games back. He started and I thought he did really well. And then someone like Timothy Fosu-Mensah, he can get the minutes in. He's a young player and I think he's a very good player. So it's a weird excuse or weird thing for Jose to be bringing up, but it's something that I do think the Premier League can do better. I just think that it's something that they probably won't. Like we said, it's falling on deaf ears. I think they'll just carry on because there's too much money in the game. That will always come first.
I think sooner or later it is going to change. I think the Premier League are going to just give the teams competing in Europe that little bit more help, because the point that Mourinho makes is that other leagues do adjust the fixtures to give their European clubs the best possible chance, because I think we've discussed this before, it is in the Premier League's interest that clubs like United, like City, like Leicester now, of course, they compete in Europe. It's in the Premier League's interest that they succeed, that they regularly reach quarterfinals, semifinals, finals, and boost the Premier League's coefficient. It's great for the league's reputation. So I think sooner or later, probably sooner rather than later, the Premier League is going to have to listen to the bigger clubs and take on what they're saying, because you want to keep the big clubs happy. You also want to You know, you do want them to do well in Europe. I think I'd have more sympathy for this discussion, etc., that if it was someone other than Mourinho who had said this, because I've got the stage now with Mourinho that anything he says, I just don't listen to it. I cannot listen to the guy, because 99% of what comes out of his mouth is just mind games and nonsense, and I think he gets way too much attention in the media. He could say the most ludicrous thing ever, and people obsess about it and discuss it and dissect it flat out. So I actually blanked out what he says, and because it's just usually just whinging or attention seeking or mind games, and I've got no interest. But yeah, actually, for once, he does raise an important point, and it's a shame that he said and not somebody I'd listen to, like, I don't know, any of the other managers in the Premier League.
It is, yeah, I mean, definitely. Oh, sorry, didn't mean to cut you off there, Joshy.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. I do think it's a very interesting point, and it is true. There's an interesting Goal article on this right now that I just saw, not to plug my own company, but three of the top five shortest turnarounds in the Premier League have had to be United's, and five of the top 10. So it is provable. The Manchester United have actually been stuck with this. I agree with Gitto. It is easy to just discount what Mourinho says, especially because he tends to blame external forces for a lot of internal problems. It seems to be his way of getting pressure off the players and everything. But so while it is true that Manchester United have been kind of on the short stick of this turnaround time, they've only lost one of those matches, and it was to Chelsea, who are pretty much beating everyone, you know, except for Tottenham. So it's kind of this, it's more true than some people think, and it's also less true than some people think. I just think that's a very interesting caveat to this whole thing.
I mean, I think obviously Jose's talking about Manchester United and how it's affected us this season. But the wider point, which Gitto's sort of alluded to, is true. Yeah. Because English teams in Europe over the last few years, I don't think, when was the last time? I mean, City were in the semi-finals last year. Is that right? And then... other than that, I don't remember too many teams getting past the quarterfinal stage, English teams. And I'm not saying it's solely down to the fixture congestion that these teams face, but other clubs do make concessions for their bigger sides that are progressing through Europe, as was mentioned earlier. And it's something that, on a wider note, not sort of sticking at United, it is something that should be considered. But, like, you know, the Premier League generates so much money that at the moment it's not being taken into account. It's when a team loses, when we lose that fourth place because of the poor coefficient, that's when things will be like, oh, well, maybe we should do more or whatever. So, yeah, I mean, obviously everyone has their opinions on Jose Mourinho, but I think, you know, there is something to be said for what he was going on about. Although, even as a Manchester United fan, I do think that the way he's sort of said it this week and the way he brought it up wasn't... I just don't subscribe to it, because we do have a good-sized squad. We were able to let go of Schneiderlin in Memphis in January, and still we do have a lot of players. And it just sort of baffles me that he plays a formation which is designed to get the best out of the likes of Ashley Young and Antonio Valencia. I love Antonio Valencia this season, but our best players are not our wing backs. So I don't see why we're playing that formation. So it's up to him. So yeah, there's a lot to be said for not listening to him at times.
Yeah, and to your larger point about other leagues caring more, as I mentioned at the very top of this, they made this TV schedule before they even knew who you'd be playing in the Europa League. And then you drew kind of the wrong opponent in Rostov. But fortunately, you had this turnaround at home. But you could have had to go to Russia before doing this, which would have been insane. And I think would have lent a lot more credence to what he was saying publicly for people that didn't look into it. All right, and now we will head into Player Watch, where we're going to talk about a player that impressed and one that disappointed for our club this weekend. If there's not anybody that disappointed you in particular, you can mention somebody that particularly stood out from the other side. So we'll start with you, Sean. Who impressed for West Ham?
Can we start who didn't impress?
Sure, the whole team. You can do two if you want.
Well, no, I'm going to go for nine of them. Nine of them upset me. I'll tell you who I've been disappointed with. I've been disappointed. You were talking about early Fonts. Yeah. You know, you said Southampton missed Font. They could have him back. I think he was a poor buy, and he's just not really done very well for us. We've lost Reed as well in injury in the game. Cresswell is just a shadow of his former self. Byram's not up for it, even though he's a right back. Don't want to be unfair to him. Mark Noble was dropped, and do you know what? I really can't pick anyone in the whole team. Andy Carroll is just a China doll. We're just waiting for him to break. The only two people, I'm going to be really, really harsh, I'm moving on who impressed. There's only two people I'd keep in the current squad, and that is Mikel Antonio and Manuel Lanzini. Yeah. And they're the only two. I'd sack the rest of them. Absolutely. Mm. Rebuild from scratch.
Start the summer with two players in your squad.
To be fair, Hull basically tried that this year.
Sorry, who tried that?
Hull. They started with eight, or what was it? They had 18 available players. Yeah. Two is less than 18, though.
Yeah, anyway, it's probably a knee-jerk reaction. That's the way I feel at the moment. People just not putting enough of a shift in to warrant their place. And we know that a lot of them have got skill, but, you know.
Cresswell's a really good point. Yeah. He was so good last season.
Yeah, and he's a shadow of his former self. And
on both ends of the pitch? Because definitely the attacking presence has gone down. Has he been a disappointment defensively as well?
Yeah. Since he came back from injury, he's been a big disappointment. Mm-hmm. And Byram, I don't think, I'm told that we will listen to offers from Byram on the summer. If a championship wants to come in for him and take him back to the championship, we wouldn't stand in their way as long as we can get our money back, which is a shame.
What about Mark Noble? You're not a fan?
Oh, I love Mark Noble. I've met Mark Noble a number of times. He missed a West Ham, but he's too slow. I just think we get a bit too nostalgic for Mark Noble. You know, that he was born in Canning Town and he, you know, he's West Ham through his veins and everything else. He criticised the fans this week. And also, I mean, we've known this on the blog for some time, but he's been playing for an injury for nearly three games and not been up front with the medical staff. And suddenly he criticised the fans, said they didn't understand football. He then tried to re-explain himself. He's been given a week off and admitted he'd been playing with an injury, which is not on, really. So, you know, we love him as a captain. We love him as a player. It's a bit like Billich, I was saying earlier. You know, he's a great guy, but is he a world-class Premier League footballer? I'm afraid the answer is no.
I'm just looking through the West Ham squad online. Sorry, through the West Ham squad online, and actually agree with you. I don't see. There's not much there really to that you would sort of go, okay, he's this, he's that. It is a bit sort of bitty, isn't it?
Mm. It is. Yeah, we are in agreement. Let's sack them all. Let's sack them all and start again.
Do it. Just start over again. Gitto, I thought that you might be a little bit downtrodden in the segment, but it'd be hard to outdo that.
I'm not going to suggest sacking the entire playing squad. I'm not even going to suggest that. It is like Sean, it's difficult to pick people who actually impressed against Bournemouth because the whole team really had a poor afternoon. If anybody can emerge with any kind of credit, I'd say it's probably Tom Carroll. He tried his best, but none of the players around him were actually up to the job. Even, you know, Gylfi Sigurdsson, say, who's been sensational over the last few weeks, he had an off day. It's tough to pick a person who actually impressed, and it's equally tough to pick up one person who disappointed more than any other, but I'll go for Federico Fernandez. I'm not going to pick on Leroy Fair because he was playing in a ridiculous position, which he should never have been doing. Federico Fernandez, he's he was brilliant when he first came here and had a really good partnership with Ashley Williams. Last season, he had a poor season and seemed to be making mistake after mistake after mistake. This season, that's continued. And there was a tiny little improvement when Clement took over. We thought, oh, is there some chance that we're getting the old player back? But he's still making mistakes. Even when he's having good games, he still makes mistakes. And yesterday, when you look at that first goal for Bournemouth, the way he just gets sucked out of position so easily, he doesn't think. It's infuriating because it puts the rest of the team under so much pressure. And like I was saying earlier, it's not really fair on a young player like Alfie Mawson when the senior partner at centre-back is doing crazy things like that. I don't know if we've got a better option than him at centre-back to replace him, because Jordi Amat is a lunatic as well. And Van der Hoorn is, he moves like tectonic plates.
He's just not a Premiership player.
No, in the Championship, I think Van der Hoorn could do a decent job. But in the Premier League, the pace of the game is just way too quick for him. He can't do it. So, we're stuck with Fernandes, really. But it's so uninspiring. And I think he's just signed a new deal. But I will hope that is with a view to selling him for quite a bit of cash in the summer. Because he's not... I don't know if at another club he could still play, still be a decent Premier League footballer, but at Swansea there's just no hope. He's just not good enough for where we want to be, and the defence has been our big problem all season, and he's a big part of that, unfortunately. So yeah, I'll give it Fernandes just ahead of Jordan Ayew, who I still don't understand why we bought him, really.
All right, and Joshy, who impressed and disappointed for Manchester United?
So, had a couple of good, impressive performances today. I thought Rashford ran the channels really well, used his pace really well. Antonio Valencia was like a machine down that right-hand side. But I'll pick out Jesse Lingard. He gets a lot of stick from a certain section of United fans. And if I'm honest, I have given him stick in the past myself. I mean... But today he was excellent. And the thing about a player like him is he's someone he's not going to be that world beater starting 11 every week. But you need players like him in your squad that are happy to sort of not play every week. And then when they come in, they can do a good job. And most of the time he does do a good job because his game is sort of based on work rate, pace. He's not got a lot of amazing skill. And every now and then he pops up with a sensational goal, and he likes scoring at Wembley. And today he played through the middle. I'm still not 100% sure what formation we played, but he was playing through the middle, sort of behind Rashford, and really driving at the Middlesbrough centre backs and defence in general. He slipped Rashford in a few times, obviously scored a sensational goal, and really was an excellent outlet for us all game. So I picked him out. And hopefully he sort of builds on that. We just need to see more consistency out of him, and he'll start to see he'll get a lot more love from the fans. I mean, he's United through and through, been at the club for years and years. And actually, even Sir Alex Ferguson, when he was talking about him when he was a lot younger, when he was about 17 or 18, picked him out and said, look, this is Jesse Lingard is a quality footballer, but you'll see the best of him at around 23, 24, and then you'll start to see him come through into the team, which is exactly what's happened. And hopefully he kicks on and uses this performance as a benchmark for himself going forward. In terms of a player that disappointed, Chris Smalling, I just don't know what's going on with him. Last season he was excellent. He started off this season very well. But he's just fallen by the wayside. And in fact, I could pick any one of the centre-backs that played today other than Bailly, but Smalling was particularly poor, at fault for the goal, tried to clear a ball with his right foot, which he should have just put his left foot through. And then at that point, we invited pressure, and he's the captain. He's supposed to be sort of leading that back line, but we were all over the place. And I mean, I don't think it helps that we were playing an unfamiliar formation, and by the end of it had four centre-backs on the pitch. but individually his performance was poor. You know, he's not good enough with the ball to step out of defense in that, you know, when you're playing a three-man back line, you hope that one of them can step out and sort of contribute in that midfield area, especially when the opposition are playing one up top. And he just can't do that. And, you know, he's played some awful ball today. I just don't know what's happened to him, because he was really very, very good for us last year under Van Gaal. And this year, I just can't. I would be surprised. He was that bad today that I would be surprised if he starts again for United. He was awful today.
Wow. For Tottenham, it was truly a game of two halves, if you'll pardon the cliche. Ali and Eriksen were just phenomenal in the first half. Also, I forgot to mention in the making the rounds, there's been a lot of debate about where Dele Alli will play long term. I, for a long time, thought he'd eventually move a little bit further back. But obviously, the goal scoring has been incredible this season, leading people to think he is going to end up staying as an attacking midfielder, or some people even calling him, you know, maybe he's going to be a false nine, maybe he's going to be an actual forward someday. And Mauricio Pochettino was asked about it, and he said, it doesn't matter where he plays, he's going to be good. So don't worry, we can stop having that debate. Pochettino's just going to play him places, and he's just going to keep being good there, apparently. But yeah, I was very impressed with Dele Alli. I think Walker was a good outlet for us, again, on the right. It really will be crucial for us getting Danny Rose back, doing the overlap on the other side as well, to keep everybody pinned back. But yeah, I'll probably go with Dele Alli. Earned and took the penalty. Eriksen in the first half, when Eriksen is at his best, we play very well. Although, as I've said in the past, I think sometimes Eriksen plays his best when we're playing well, not the other way around. But I was really impressed with that duo on the whole. Disappointed, really hard. Oh, also, I didn't mention Dembele or Wanyama, who were just ridiculous in the midfield. They were so terrific. Just throughout, Wanyama just continues to be a ridiculous piece of business. And as I mentioned earlier in the season, when we were in a 4-2-3-1, I really wasn't that huge a fan of his, because he's a very limited player. But ever since we started playing this three at the back, and his role has only become to protect the back line, you know, I know everybody is having their Conte week right now, because he scored a goal and that's reminded people that he can defend, which is a phenomenon I'll never understand. Conte is absolutely terrific. But he also did cost $30 million. I'm not saying he wasn't worth that. He's, you know, in a title-winning team most likely for a second straight season. I think there's a lot of reason to that. But Wanyama for 12 is just absurd. The way he's played for us since we've adopted this new formation has just been nothing short of fantastic. And Dembele couldn't be dispossessed if you wanted to. There was that old joke about Dembele that on his best day you couldn't get the ball off of him, and on his worst day you wouldn't want to. He's really eliminated that second part, and has just been terrific for us. And then Winks comes on and he passes the ball well. I really was impressed. The second half, I think, was a team failure. I think it was a relaxation with the two-goal lead that we really can't afford if we want to secure top four. And something occurred to me just a second ago, which is Leicester are still in the Champions League, and this has happened to us before. So we really need to make sure that it's top three. But anyway, yeah, so I was very pleased with most of the performances on the whole. A little disappointed with Toby, but like I said, you can't be too harsh on him. But yeah, I'll just say our front three in the second half. Things just got really stagnant, really, after the break. All right, and that'll do it for us today. So if you guys have any projects you'd like to plug or want to tell people where to reach you, now would be a good time.
So as usual, we're carrying on our West Ham podcast called More Than Just a Podcast. And we've just completed a London Stadium study or survey by 6,360 fans, match game fans. And we'll be releasing it on the podcast tomorrow and on our blogs, Claret and Hugh and West Ham Till I Die, and sending it to the West Ham board. So that's the exciting project. I'm not allowed to. It's embargoed at the moment, so I can't reveal the results. But we asked 21 questions to West Ham fans all about the London Stadium and the former Olympic Stadium, you've known it, and how happy fans are 7 months in. The results will be known soon.
The Jackass will be recording early in the week, probably Tuesday night, and we'll be looking back at the Swans match and looking forward to Wales's huge match against Ireland during the international break. And you can find us on Twitter Jackcast.
Well, thanks for having me on. You can find me at @doc_joshy on Twitter and various podcasts, obviously including this one, and various YouTube channels, which I will tweet from my Twitter.
Yeah, and I'm your host, Kevin DeVries, @Kevroff on Twitter. I'm also the lead fantasy writer now over at goal.com, so be sure to go check that out. Although we will be a little light on content this week with the international break, but there will be a Team of the Week piece up today as you're listening to this. Also host the FPL Roundtable, which will be on a break this week because of the aforementioned international break. Really, I'm going to stop plugging things because none of them are going to be happening this week. But obviously, if you want to reach us here at the podcast, you can do so by following us at EPL Roundtable or emailing us EPLRoundtable@gmail.com. All right, thanks so much for joining us, guys. It's been a pleasure as always, and we hope you keep listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.